Hello, everyone. I just want to start by saying I love you. I am not the same person that I was last week. I think I should just say that right up front. I was literally changed over the weekend. Camp for Miracles was an extremely appropriate name, at least in my case. And I'm just going to go ahead and try and describe what happened to me right off the bat, because some of you may have already noticed a change. If you've been watching my postings on the Peace of God, you may have already noticed. So I'm just going to start right off by explaining as best I can. But I would say that what has happened to me is I have become aware of a higher level of love. I don't know how else to describe it. It is a higher level of love. And it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. It actually takes a bit of getting used to. There's a part of me, which of course would be the ego, a part of the mind, that actually does not like it. It doesn't. And so in order to maintain it, there is, there has to be a willingness, more than a willingness, it's a decision. It's a decision. It's more than a willingness. It's a decision. Because there is another part of the mind that really wants to throw this away. There's another part of the mind that does not like this at all. And so what I am describing is not the state of what we would call egoless. It's not that. But it is very, very definitely a higher level of love than I have ever been aware of before. And it is amazing. I'm finding that I am truly in love with everyone and everything in a way that I never have been before. And probably a number of things at the camp led to me having this experience. One of those things, however, was a person that I met. There was a person that came to the Camp for Miracles, interestingly enough, to see me. He thought he was coming to see me, but I feel very clearly that he was sent to help me. But he came, when I first saw him, my eyes first saw him, all I saw was light. And to be actually, as honest as I can, I was struck with fear. And I very quickly looked away. I didn't even want to look at him. And then as I was not looking at him, I thought about what I saw, and I thought about my reaction, and I realized that I could choose again. I realized I did not have to listen to that fear that did not want to look at the light. And so I looked back at him, and in spite of the fear, smiled. That was all that was required. He was like across the room from me. But I smiled, and that was my way of saying to the fear, I was not going to fear this light. And as he came closer, I said hello to him, and we were able to hug. But what happened over the weekend, I was with a lot of people over the weekend, but I had a number of opportunities to be with this man. And what was really amazing is that I continued to see the light in him whenever I talked to him. It was very, very, very clear. And what was really funny about it was, of course, he does not see the same light. And so when he talked, it was undoubtedly the Holy Spirit. But there were other times when he spoke, and he spoke like a man. And I remember even thinking it was funny. It was difficult for me to even take him seriously because I barely saw, I could see the thin veil over him that looked like a man, but for the most part, all I saw was the light, and it was funny to me that this light should be talking as if it was a man. It was just funny to me. And as I got to spend more time with him, what actually started to happen was I began to see that light in others. So it spread. It started with him, but it spread, and I began to really see it in everyone in a way that I never have before. And it was that as it spread from him to everyone, that I began to be lifted up into this love and this gratitude that was so overwhelming that on Sunday morning, I was just crying. Even when it was time for me to get up and speak, I was crying, and they had to stop and, let me, wipe my face with tissues and begin again. And in fact, I think I actually affected several people because I saw others burst out in tears as well. And the love, the love was just incredible, but it has not left me. And one thing I'm very aware of is why it has not left me. Because another thing that I learned as I talked to this man and several others, there were people there who had had experiences of joy, experiences of peace, experiences of happiness. You might even call them real world experiences. People there who had approached what we call the eye of the needle. And I had conversations with a lot of these people, and I heard these stories over and over and over again. And one thing that I noticed that was consistent in all the stories, each of these people had come back from that experience, their experience of joy, pure joy, or pure peace, or real world, or eye of the needle. All of these experiences had ended, and they had, we could say, come back into the world as it was before. But as I listened to each and every one of them tell their story, I heard why. Even though they weren't even aware of it, it was kind of funny. They weren't aware. They would say to me, I don't know why it ended. But then as they told their story, each one of them told me literally the point where they decided that it would end. Each one of them told me that point where they made the decision. And in fact, on the final day, I happened to have breakfast, and some of them were all at the same table with me. And I was able to say, and you told me that, you know, you made this decision, and that's when it ended. And you told me that you made this decision, and that's when it ended. And I was able to show each of them and me that what ended the experience was literally a decision. And so the reverse of that is that if we want the experience to continue, that is also a decision. It's a decision not to listen to the ego. It's a decision not to entertain the ego. It's a decision not to believe the ego. And as I mentioned, you know, what I'm experiencing now is incredible, but it is not egoless. It is not egoless. And so what I have to do is make a constant decision to stay with this experience. I have to... Well, the one thing that I find that really helps is I have to tell people that I love them. It seems that as I keep expressing my love for everyone and everything, that is very, very helpful. But I also have to look at the thoughts that come into the mind, which the ego, you know, is bringing into the mind literally to bring me down from this. And I have to let those thoughts go very, very quickly. It is a decision. And I think that's all I have to say right now. So I'll let go of the mic and see if anybody has anything they want to say. All right, then, that's all I have to say. So if I seem different, I am. I really am. I'm changed forever, and it is my intention to maintain that. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go to reginadonacres.com. Let me give you that link. There you go, reginadonacres.com. Stephen Laurie, I notice you have your hand up. Please take the mic.
Yeah, I didn't hear the whole thing what you were saying. I missed the first minute or two, but we were on a very, I guess maybe you could say a similar kind of a retreat in that we were just listening to the Holy Spirit all weekend at Pathways of Light. But when I heard... Mary Ellen, I think we taped it, heard Mary Ellen come on. The first half hour of what she was sharing yesterday was very similar to what I heard you say. You know, she just had a experience of listening to the Holy Spirit the whole weekend, and she shared for about a half hour, and then she did that, and we shared a little bit too, and then we shared with her after on an instant message and stuff. But it was very similar to what you were sharing with... And I think the thing that stood out was when you were saying a lot of people had tears in their eyes. Well, yeah, there were a lot of people that had tears in their eyes during that Holy Spirit weekend at Pathways, too. So maybe it was all connected. We don't know for sure yet. But the experience is very similar to what I heard you share and what Mary Ellen was sharing and what I saw the people experiencing over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday in Wisconsin, too. So I guess Laurie's wheeling her way over. She wanted to say something, too, I think.
Yeah, what I wanted to share was... thank you so much, Regina. We experienced the weekend, and it's funny because you were on a weekend too in a different place, but it was funny how it all worked very similar. And when we, Monday morning, when the experience was all over, a number of us said, wow, we're just going to keep this going. We're going to keep this weekend going, this workshop going. We're going to keep choosing the Holy Spirit. So that's what I wanted to share. Thank you.
Yeah, and that was my experience in the morning, too, is, like, I didn't really want to let go of it. And I had even mentioned during the weekend, like, people say, like, oh, I want to stay here forever and stuff like that, you know. And I'd mentioned it to Robert Solting that I heard that in the past at different weekends like that, you know. And I said, well, it's all going on in your mind, so as long as you keep your mind focused, or, you know, as long as you remember what was in your mind and stay with those thoughts, you can take it with you wherever you go. So that was kind of neat. So I think I heard you say a little bit of that in what you were sharing, too, that it was all going on in your mind, and it wasn't at where you were at, it was just what was going on in your head at the time that gave you the experience. So thanks for letting us both share a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really, really grateful to hear you all share that. And, you know, that's why I wanted to state so clearly that, you know, this is a decision. And, of course, you know I'm stating that for me, that this is a decision. Because I think it's really important to remain aware of that. It's really important to remain aware of the fact that this is a decision, and to just keep making that decision. Because, again, as I listen to people tell their stories about their experiences, and for some of them, you know, their joy and peace and love experiences were very pure and lasted for many months. But each one of them, one by one, also described the decision they made that brought them out of it. Each one of them made a conscious decision, and they weren't even able, they didn't even really realize it, because they were still saying, I don't know why it ended, until I was able to sit down with all of them after hearing all of the stories separately and say, you told me this, and you told me this, and you told me this, and point out for each one of them the decision that they had made, and then they recognized it. But I saw that as a very important lesson. You know, I mean, I don't think there was any accident in me saying that. Holy Spirit was saying, you know, it is all a decision. It is all a decision. And so I have to keep making the decision. And yes, as Cliff is saying, heaven is a decision I must make. And I really want to get that. I really want to get that. So there we go. So I keep saying it over and over again, like a broken record. Steve and Lori, please take the mic.
Well, I haven't had any revelatory experiences myself. I know Lori has, but I remember two or three people sharing them with me, and it was funny what you said because of how they ended. The person was sharing with me that he was with God and everything was oneness and there was nothing different. Then he had this idea that he had to tell somebody yes. something in the dream. And he went back to tell somebody something in the dream, and whoop, there he was right back in the dream. So that's still that idea of separation, that there is somebody in the dream that you can tell something to, you know? And then just like that, he was out of the dream and back, I mean, out of God's oneness and back in the dream. So I don't know, maybe there was a generality like that in what you were hearing, but all it was for this one guy was he just, I thought there was somebody I had to tell something to, and that's it, you know? Then I was, poof, I was right back in the dream.
Yeah, I'm noticing a question to give examples. I'll be very happy to do that. And I think that although I did not hear the exact same story that Steve just shared, I would lump that story into the same category. If I had spoken to that person this weekend, I would have said, and you made the decision when you decided you needed to tell someone in the dream. I heard someone else say that they realized they still had something they had to do in the world. And as soon as they made the decision, there was still something they had to do in the world. They let go of the experience. Another person said that he... it's so funny because it's so clear. And yet, you know, up until I pointed it out to him, he really didn't know why the experience ended. But he literally said, stop. Stop. I can't take this anymore. Because it really is vibrationally, and his experience, I think, was higher than the one I'm feeling. It really is vibrationally quite different, and it is an adjustment. And based on how he described his experience, I think his was quite a bit higher than mine. So his vibrational level must have been quite strong. And he literally said, stop, stop, I can't take it anymore. You know, so, and you know, and another person certainly described it just as fear. You know, he said he was just afraid, and so he turned away from it. But, you know, that is a decision. Fear is a decision as well. And in fact, you know, remember that when I described this person that seemed to be the light for me this weekend, when I first looked at him, remember, I looked away. That was my initial reaction, was to look away. But then I decided, still looking away, but knowing he was still there, I decided that I was not going to listen to that fear. I was going to look again. And so I looked again and I smiled at him. But that, you know, it sounds like such a simple thing to look at a person and smile, but he was such a strong image of light for me. It was actually a firm decision. It was a firm decision to turn and look at this one and smile, because the ego in me wanted nothing more than to avoid him. That's an example of some of the decisions that people made which changed their state of mind. And in the way I'm feeling now, I'm feeling that I love everyone and everything. And I think that, what the ego seems to want to do is to find something not to love. It wants to find something, anything. It doesn't care what. And if I allow it to go on this, search and find mission that it wants to go in, that will pull me down. So what I've noticed, I've had an awful lot of emails today, more than normal, and I've noticed that I'm reading the emails differently. There are parts of the emails I'm not responding to. I may respond to a person, I'll respond to part of their email and not another part of their email, for example. Let me give you a specific example that I know I can use. This is actually from the weekend, but my mother, I was talking to my mother on the phone while I was there, and she asked me how my room was, and I commented that I had a very, very nice room. And she said to me, "Oh, good, I know you were worried." Now, actually, the thought of being worried that I would not have a nice room never crossed my mind, so I have no idea where she came up with that comment. I really don't know where it came from, but once upon a time, I would have come back to her and said to her, "Mother, I was never worried." And even something as small as that could bring me down. It's what I'm finding is just to let the comment go and to make no response at all leaves me up. But if I address the comment, "No, Mother, I never felt that way," those kinds of things can bring me down immediately. So it's seeming that it's truly best just to overlook the ego completely in everyone. Isn't that what Holy Spirit always tells us? Because if we give the ego any attention, it just pulls us right down. So Stephen Laurie, please take the mic again.
Yeah, I was just going to share that Laurie said she had nightmares on Sunday night after it was over. I know, and then she woke up and started asking me questions. I said, "Well, maybe it's the ego trying to get back into control, feeling like he's losing control." Just like Regina said, in that two evaluations where, well, as long as it's only suspicious, it's not bad. But once it thinks that you're making progress, then it turns to viciousness and it tries to get control of your mind again. So that's what I shared with Laurie yesterday morning when similar things seemed to be happening. You know, she said, "Oh, I'm getting nightmares all of a sudden." You know, I said, "Well, maybe the ego doesn't like it that you're losing control, that he's losing control of your mind." So that's just what we were sharing yesterday. So thanks again for letting me share.
Okay, and then Tappengarg. I'm not sure of your name. Hopefully I said your handle okay, but I want to read this. Let's see. "Yes, I made the decision too during intense self-inquiry once. After half an hour of being in a thoughtless state, a lot of fear arose, and I had a conversation with a voice, ego, which said, 'I'll give you a good life,' and I said, 'Okay.' Poof, I was back." So, you know, I think it's really cool to be able to study each of these, you know, not really study, but to be able to have these examples of the decisions that we make that bring us out of these experiences. And the good news is, you know, if we do make a decision that brings us out of the experience, we don't have to stay out of it. We can actually, you know, go right to the Holy Spirit right then and change our mind and come back. That has happened to me a couple of times. I think I wrote about that yesterday, that when I returned from the camp, I returned to several emails, which led me to cry. And it's funny because there was no defensiveness in the emails, although if you would have read the emails, they would have appeared to have been attacking me. I literally did not feel attacked. But what I felt was sad for my brothers. I knew the ones who had wrote the emails were upset. I knew the ones who had wrote the emails were suffering in one way or another. And I felt their pain is what I felt. And I immediately came down and I was crying, and all of the love and all of the joy that I had been feeling was gone. And I went to Holy Spirit and I said, "Help, I do not want this. I don't want this." And literally the Holy Spirit allowed me to see these brothers, well, to see their Holy Spirit. I mean, I saw the form of them in my mind, but I saw the form of them that was standing peaceful and patient and was okay, even while they seemed to be upset. And then as I turned my focus on that one, I felt myself being lifted up again. I felt myself very connected to that one. And so you can see how that is really looking right past the ego to the truth within. So as long as we keep our eyes with the truth, keep our eyes with the Holy Spirit, we're fine. But literally, as soon as we turn our eyes to the ego, we come down. I mean, literally. And so, you know, I think it's a really good question to ask, well, how do we avoid becoming the bliss ninny? And I'll define bliss ninny for you right now. This is Regina's definition. I'm not sure what Ken's definition is. But Regina's definition of a bliss ninny would be someone who maintains the high through denial. Through denial, rather than, you know, having it be a legitimate love. It's maintained through denial. So the real question is, you know, how do we maintain this without being the bliss ninny, or without denying things that we should be letting go? And I think the real answer is that we do not fear the thoughts that come into the mind. When we fear a thought that comes into the mind, we deny it. But if a thought comes into the mind and we just look right at it and say, I do not want that, and let it go quickly, that is not the same thing as denial. You know, denying out of fear and letting go out of a lack of desire is not the same thing. And so really what we need to do is we need to make that decision quickly. And when these thoughts come into the mind, as quickly as we can let them go, whether that be an instant or whether that be what I went through yesterday, which was like it took me about half an hour with Holy Spirit to let go of my focus on the ego that seemed to come about through those emails. You know, as quickly as we can do it, we need to let go of the ego, let go of our attention on the ego. I think what is really damaging is focusing on the ego, spending way too much time thinking about it, you know, analyzing it, discussing it with others. Focusing on the ego brings us down. The ego is to be let go of. It's to be let go of. And the quicker we let go of it, the better. So identify with love and you are safe. Identify with love and you are home. Identify with love and find yourself. That's what Dortha is writing. And then Dove is saying, that is a decision. Absolutely. That's my main point, which, you know, I, again, am making very strongly for me. It is a decision. It is a decision. It is a decision. And, you know, I'm not a victim of any circumstance at all. It is always a decision. And I want to make the decision to maintain this new level of love that I have discovered. Yes, heaven is a decision I must make. Absolutely. I'll tell you what, hopefully you are all at reginadonacres.com by now. I will give you the link one more time. If you are already at reginadonacres.com, oh, there's the link again. Thank you, David. What you want to do is go to April 2005. Make sure you get 2005. There are other Aprils in there as well. And when you get to April 2005, at the top of the page, you'll want to click on Previous Entries just once. And then scroll down to Monday, April 18th. That is where we are starting today. And the name of this is I Need Do Nothing. So what I'm going to do first is read it. And then we'll talk about it. Here we go. I need do nothing, for to plan to do anything is to play the game. If I plan to return meanness with kindness, I am seeing myself as a body in the game and I am playing. If I plan to resist temptation to be short-tempered, I am seeing myself as a body in the game and I am playing. I need do nothing is a commitment not to play. It is a commitment not to be a body in the game. It is a commitment not to be a playing piece with a strategy for winning. It is a commitment not to play. It is the means for stepping outside the ring of illusion into the real world. I need do nothing. I need not play. Now, this is really a continuation of a writing that the Holy Spirit gave me a few days before this, which we talked about last week. And that was when I mentioned to you that the Holy Spirit showed me the world as a board game. And it was a board game of war, a board game of war. And we were all sitting around the board game, and we all were represented on the board by little pieces. And what would happen is one piece would attack another piece, and then it would be that piece's turn. And that piece could attack back, or that piece could take some type of strategic action to get ready for a better attack later, you know, like getting other people on its side, you know, building up an army. Or it could run and hide. It could take some kind of evasive maneuver. It could do anything it wanted to in reaction to the attack. And then it would be another piece's turn, etc. But what Holy Spirit taught me is that if we want to wake up from the illusion, we have to stop playing the game. Because as long as we're still focused on the game, we're still focused on the illusion. So basically what the Holy Spirit taught me is when someone seems to attack me or play the game, you know, and it was now obviously my turn, that my job is to do nothing, to not play, to pass. So literally, you know, lots of people here playing this game of war, and when it's my turn, I'm supposed to say, I pass. And just let it go right on by me. And the game of war may continue, but every time it comes around and it's my turn, I'm to say, I pass. And it's by saying, I pass, and not participating, that we wake up. So, this was a follow-on to that, and really the Holy Spirit was getting a little more specific regarding some of the things I do to play. Okay, hold on one second. I'm noticing a question. Cliff says, I cannot find where in April 2005. So, Cliff, you are in April 2005. You want to find Monday, April 18th. That's where I'm at, Monday, April 18th. So depending on where you are, you may have to scroll down or up or click on previous entries or next entries. But just look at where you are in the dates. And you're looking for Monday, April 18th. All right. So what was happening in this writing is now the Holy Spirit is showing me ways that I play that I did not yet realize were playing. For example, if there was a particular person at work who, you know, I could pretty much count on being mean to me, you know, because every time I'm around her, she's mean to me again. What I was doing was planning in advance that the next time she's mean to me, I would be nice. And Holy Spirit's saying, no, that's still planning. That's still strategizing. You're not passing. You're still playing when you plan to be nice to someone who is mean to you or rude to you. You know, if I know that I always get short-tempered when Jasmine does a certain thing, when Jasmine won't go to bed on time, for example, let's say, and I know that I always get short-tempered, so I plan in advance that tonight when Jasmine does this thing I don't like, I will not get short-tempered. Holy Spirit says, no, that's not passing. That's still playing the game. What you're doing is strategizing. And what I didn't see then that I see now is the mistake that I was making that Holy Spirit was trying to teach me to stop making was, again, I was still focusing on the ego. Do you see how when I'm planning to see this mean person and be nice to this mean person, do you see how I'm still seeing the ego, right? I mean, how can I see a mean person and plan to be nice to a mean person without seeing the ego? Same thing with I'm planning on being annoyed and then, you know, resisting being annoyed, you know, when Jasmine doesn't want to go to bed on time or whatever. So I was still focusing on the ego, and so I was still playing the game. And at this time, I didn't see that as playing the game. I saw that as being spiritual. I saw planning to be kind, planning to return meanness with kindness as being spiritual. It is not spiritual. It's strategizing to win the game. And if you're strategizing to win the game, you are playing the game. That's where the I need do nothing comes in. I pass. Okay, so let's see. Big resistance coming up is making a decision and being vigilant to reinforce it, not doing something to. Why not let Holy Spirit decide whether you should continue to be in this state of mind or not? My answer to that is that this state of mind is Holy Spirit. That's what this state of mind is. There really are only two states of mind, ego or Holy Spirit. And Holy Spirit is not separate from me. There is no one outside of me. that would decide what state of mind I am in. So I am making the decision to either be in the Holy Spirit state of mind or the ego state of mind. Those are the only decisions I can make. And it's very clear in A Course in Miracles that these are the only decisions we can make. There are only two interpreters, as you know, the Course says, and we have to decide which interpreter that we can listen to. So really, this is the only decision we can make, is which state of mind we will be in. Hopefully that answers that okay. So I think that's all I have to say about this, unless anybody has any questions. If not, I will just read it again. All right, then. Let's read it one more time. I need do nothing, for to plan to do anything is to play the game. If I plan to return meanness with kindness, I am seeing myself as a body in the game, and I am playing. If I plan to resist temptation to be short-tempered, I am seeing myself as a body in the game, and I am playing. I need do nothing is a commitment not to play. It is a commitment not to be a body in the game. It is a commitment not to be a playing piece with a strategy for winning. It is a commitment not to play. It is the means for stepping outside the ring of illusion into the real world. I need do nothing. I need not play. And I think also many of you have probably heard me teach. Oops, I see Steve and Lori have their hands up. I'll let them take the mic first, and then Cliff has a question. So I'll take Cliff after Steve and Lori. Steve and Lori, please take the mic.
This is just a question. I'm just wondering if when you're looking back on this, I need do nothing about playing the game, if it had anything from when you did the I need do nothing in the text, from the Manual for Teachers. I remember you did a teaching or a reading on I Need Do Nothing, and I know I've listened to it once or twice with Lori, but I'm wondering if you're seeing any similarities now, or, you know, any similarities or differences into where you're at now as to where you were at when you first wrote this I Need Do Nothing here, and then later when you did the I Need Do Nothing in the Manual for Teachers, or, I mean, the text of the teaching you did on that in the text. So that was just a question. I just a thought. You know, it might not be anything, but I just wanted to raise the thought or question it because I was hearing it. So thanks for letting me ask.
Yeah, Steve, that's what I was just about to talk about anyway. So, yeah, let me talk about that. When I read I Need Do Nothing in the Course, you know, just reading it, I didn't understand it at all. And I think we all know that a lot of people don't understand it at all. You know, like we read I Need Do Nothing as if we're supposed to just sit on the sofa and never get up. And we all know that's confusion when we understand it that way, because it feels confusing. If it feels confusing, it is confusion. And, you know, certainly I Need Do Nothing does not mean sit on the sofa and never get up. So I would say that these two writings that came in April in 2005 were my first understanding of I Need Do Nothing. And in fact, I've developed three different understandings so far. But this was my first understanding of I Need Do Nothing. And in this understanding of I Need Do Nothing, I saw I Need Do Nothing as the definition of forgiveness. You know, being willing to pass, so that, you know, no matter what anybody would say to me, for example, because I have been fortunate in that I'm not typically attacked physically, unless you count my daughter. Occasionally she'll hit me. But, you know, I don't really have the experience in my life of being attacked physically. So whenever I am, quote, attacked, it's with words. So I Need Do Nothing really meant that no matter what anybody said to me, all I would do is pass and just let that go. I would say nothing back. I would, you know, not necessarily change my behavior to make them happy, for example, unless I felt really guided by Holy Spirit. But, you know, I would never change my behavior in order to make them happy. You know, I Need Do Nothing literally meant I would simply pass. And then, you know, of course, very early on, anytime anybody said anything to me, lots of stuff would come up, lots of guilt or lots of unworthiness or lots of fear. And so all I would do is focus on letting that go as I passed, but I would in no way play. So I Need Do Nothing the first definition as it reached my mind was a means of forgiveness. The second I need do nothing that Holy Spirit brought to me is when it was started teaching me, again, it's still forgiveness, but it's a more advanced forgiveness. It started teaching me to literally let go of self. The first I need do nothing was letting go of, you know, grievance, kind of, letting go of throwing away your peace. The second I need do nothing was letting go of self, letting go of my desire to plan, Cliff, which I'll answer your question in a second, but my desire to plan to buy a house, my desire to figure out and plan anything, my desire to be in control. And what Holy Spirit really showed me I need do nothing meant in that case is literally I need do nothing but wait for prompts. It's letting go of thinking, letting go of efforting. But what I found is that prompts come fairly regularly. I actually keep very, very busy, so it's still not sitting on the sofa, but it is letting go of control. So that was the second definition of I need do nothing. It was the letting go of the little self, or letting go of the thinking mind, or letting go of efforting, or as Dortha is saying, dropping the agenda, and just wanting to feel no prompts and follow those prompts as they come up in the moment without planning. The third definition of I need do nothing that came to me is when I began to have glimpses of our oneness. And I, you know, I've had a few opportunities to see that. And in seeing that, what you see is that everything is perfect now. And you realize I need do nothing. You know, there's nowhere to go. There's nothing to change. Everything is literally perfect now. The only thing that could be said to be missing is my experience of that perfection. If I am listening to the ego and perceiving that perfection through the ego, I do not realize it is perfect, but it is. So literally, I need do nothing. I mean, I can continue to listen to the ego for a billion more years if I want to. I can, because everything is already perfect. I need do nothing. It is done. So those are the three definitions of I need do nothing that have come into my mind so far. So let's see. As long as I believe I'm the doer, all I can do is decide between the two voices. When I no longer identify with the separate being, I need do nothing. This is what is coming up for me. Yes. And, you know, Blackie is saying, I need not give to charities, but if I do, that is also perfect. You know, it's really interesting, Blackie, because I had an experience a few months ago where I was going to the peace of God, and I actually have a button on my computer. All I have to do is click on it, and it goes straight to the peace of God every time. So it's pretty easy to get there. And I clicked on that button, and it did not go to the peace of God. It went to World Visions, which is a charity. And a picture of a little boy popped up. His name was Minor. And it was shocking to me because I was so certain I was going to the peace of God, and instead I went to this picture of this little boy, and I thought, wow, is this a prompt? And so I asked Holy Spirit, you know, did you want me to say yes to this? Do you want me to sponsor this little boy, Minor? And as soon as I asked that question, I was reminded of a time a few years ago that I promised I would one day do that. And I knew that when that memory came up, that was Holy Spirit's way of saying yes. So I went and began to sponsor that little boy right then. So you can see how even that decision to give to charity in that case was a guided decision. Literally, I did nothing. I didn't make a personal decision that I was going to give to a charity and go figure out which charity I should give to, blah, 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 blah. You know, it was given to me, and all I had to do was say yes. So yeah, giving to charities can be very clearly guided. All we have to do is ask Holy Spirit. That's right. We don't want to make those kinds of decisions, but Holy Spirit may guide us. Lots of course students think because we are told not to change the world, to change our mind about the world, that means that we aren't going to be guided to give to charities, or we aren't going to be guided to join the Peace Corps, for example. You know, whenever we make those kinds of decisions, we're limiting the type of guidance we can receive. And the Holy Spirit gives guidance that is the best for everyone, whether they're studying the course or not. So we don't really want to make decisions in advance about what the Holy Spirit's guidance might look like or might not look like. We just want to be willing for anything the Holy Spirit asks us to do. All right, so back up to Cliff. Cliff says, what about if I want to buy a house? I have to get pre-qualified first, so that is a plan. You know, one thing that I learned about the Holy Spirit, Cliff, because since I've been with the Holy Spirit, you know, in a conscious way, I have been guided to move. And so I had to do things like sell a house and buy a house and pack and get movers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what I found is that if I just trusted that the Holy Spirit would prompt me when to do what, those prompts came. I did not have to plan in the traditional way. And in fact, the very first one that came was about the decision. Whoa. Hey, Jasmine. Ow. Oh, Jasmine just came in and slipped and fell. Come here, give me a kiss. Owie. Come here and give me a kiss, and then I'm teaching, so you'll have to go away for 15 minutes. 20 minutes. Give me a kiss.
Kiss my knee.
Your knee? Mm-hmm. Tell everybody hello.
Bye.
I love you.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, go close the door, and I'll be out in 20 minutes, okay?
Okay.
All right, so back to the story. The first decision that seemed to need to be made was what realtor? You know, what realtor would I use to sell my house? And I physically remember deciding not to decide that. I mean, that's what I did. I just decided I was not going to go researching realtors and trying to make a decision about realtors. I simply wasn't. And nothing happened at first. But about a month later, for no apparent reason, I found myself thinking about a particular woman that I knew that was a realtor. She's not anybody I had seen in years, but she came up in my mind three times. And I was very new at following guidance then. Had I been more experienced, maybe the first time she came up in my name, I would have called her. But I was very new at following guidance and very unsure. So I did nothing. But she came up in my mind three times in one day. On the next day, she called me. It was a cold call. And again, this wasn't anybody I knew well. It was a cold call. She had just changed from one company to another, and she was, you know, just calling everybody to tell them, you know, that she was with this new company now. But she called me the next day, and then I knew that was my guidance. This was my realtor. So what I found is that if I didn't try to make the decisions, if I didn't try to plan, if I just trusted, Holy Spirit guided me every step of the way. And I felt the prompt when to pick up the phone and make a specific phone call regarding moving or whatever. So, again, it really is about letting go of self, letting go of thinking, trusting the Holy Spirit, and then guidance still comes. To the average person that's watching us, it doesn't necessarily look any different. They'll still see us doing all the same things. But what is different is that we are letting go of the ego, and we're letting go of the belief in an independent self, and we're trusting the guidance and allowing the guidance to come, and we're getting better and better at learning how to recognize and hear guidance. I'll let go of the mic and see if anybody has anything to say. Yes, let go of lack and listen. And it does take practice. I mean, you know, we all know that the master pianist, no matter how gifted they were when they were born, the master pianist still has to practice. We all know that. They practice hours and hours and hours to become a master pianist. Well, what we are really attempting to do is to become forgiveness masters. That's what Jesus was. He was a forgiveness master, and a master at listening to the Holy Spirit and letting go of the ego would be another way of wording it. But we are attempting to become masters, and in order to become a master, we need to practice. So we need to start wherever we're at, give the situation to the Holy Spirit, and trust. Trust is the most important thing we can do. Trust. And I have never, ever, ever been disappointed when I chose to trust the Holy Spirit. Not once. I really want to say that very loudly. Not once when I made the decision to trust the Holy Spirit was I disappointed. Every single time I was guided. You know, and of course, the most famous story is the one about finding the publisher for NTI. I was feeling not to go look for a publisher in the traditional way of, you know, searching one out, sending query letters everywhere, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I was feeling guided to wait and that the publisher would be provided. And I will tell you that not everyone, not all of you, trusted my guidance. I definitely have people telling me that I was making a mistake. And I definitely had people telling me what I should do, even specifically who I should go to in order to get the book published. And there were times that the doubt came up in my mind, am I wrong and everybody else right? Should I be doing this differently? You know? And then I would just put the doubt aside. I would just put the doubt aside. I would choose not to listen to that doubt, and I would choose to trust a publisher will be provided. I need do nothing. And I knew that it was very important that I stayed with that trust. It was very important that I found the publisher this way without my effort. Because that it wasn't about finding a publisher, although, you know, we all know NTI is to get out there. But for me personally, it wasn't about finding a publisher. It was about letting go of self. It was about letting go of efforting. And, as you all know, in the end, the publisher was provided, and I did nothing to find the publisher, and everything is moving along perfectly. So, not once, when I chose to truly, firmly trust the Holy Spirit and let go of any doubt and any fear that came into my mind, not once has the Holy Spirit let me down. So, trust is incredible. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know it. Cliff is making a comment. I was laughing because I had no idea what he was talking about with the first comment. But as he's continuing, I do know. He says, like the guy on the train with the policeman, Ram Dass. Yes, exactly like that. Ram Dass knew that he was to be on the train. He had no ticket. He simply trusted the Holy Spirit. Yes, Swami Ram Dass. And it's a very miraculous story, which I've told twice, so I won't tell again. But in the end, the man whose job it was to keep him off of the train, the policeman who was supposed to keep him off of the train, is the one who put him on the train, even though it might mean losing his own job. And he only did it because he felt strongly that Swami Ram Dass was to be on the train. So Swami Ram Dass did nothing but trust, and indeed he was on the train. So, yes, listening again to your own internal teacher. Absolutely, absolutely. I'm really so grateful for you all. I love you. Yeah, Ram Dass simply observed. All right, anything else before we go on to whatever is next in April of 2005? Yes, welcome, Carolyn. Carolyn has been absent. She's been away for a while where there was no internet access. It's great to see you in the room again, Carolyn. We love you. Okay, tell you what, let's go to Tuesday, April 19th. Tuesday, April 19th, and it's called Brothers, Our Will is One. Our will is one. We will for love, happiness, peace, and security. But in the ignorance of our belief in separate kingdoms, we believe that what we seek must be ours alone. And so we seek what we desire in defenses, not realizing that our own self-erected defenses keep us from the awareness that our will is. Our will is. Let us lay down our senseless defenses today and see the truth. It is here, awaiting nothing more than our willing recognition of it as fact. And, of course, this was at a time when I really was not able to see our oneness at all. And, you know, again, Holy Spirit kept telling me that we were all one, and I'd look at everyone and think, you know, all I could see were the differences. You know, all I could really see were the differences. So the we are one was kind of meaningless. And so since all I saw was the differences, what Holy Spirit did for me on this day was help me to change the way I was looking. This is still a very basic way of looking, but it was a stepping stone. Instead of looking at everyone and seeing differences, Holy Spirit helped me to look at everyone and see sameness. And to see that everyone, regardless of how they go about getting it, everyone wants the same thing. Everyone wants love. Everyone wants happiness. Everyone wants peace. And everyone wants security. Those four basic things everyone wants. They may go about it in completely different ways. Some may practice a life of crime. Some may manipulate and control others. Some may be workaholics. Some may play the victim and try to get others to take care of them. I mean, there's a myriad of ways of going about getting these four things. But when my eyes were focused only on the differences, Holy Spirit helped me by helping me to focus on those things. And so what I started to see in all sorts of behaviors that I was previously judging, what I started to see is that those behaviors came from wanting love, happiness, peace, and security. And that was a very important stepping stone for me, because it really helped me to start seeing the sameness in everyone. And we need to see the sameness before we get to oneness, or at least I did. So, again, this was a very helpful message to me. I'll let go of the mic and see if anybody has anything to say. All right, then, let's just move to Thursday, April 21st. It looks like I was meditating on lesson 330. I will not hurt myself again today. It's kind of funny. That's what we were talking about, you know, really at the beginning when I was saying that this love, this new level of love that I'm feeling, I recognize can be lost if I allow it to. If I allow myself to focus on the ego, that I can just come right down. And I talked about how in order to maintain this level of love, that is a decision. I must consistently decide to stay here and to let go of the ego. So that this first line, I will not hurt myself again today, is reminding me of that, except my whole screen just went somewhere else. Hold on. Oh, no, my computer's going wacko. All right, here we are. I will not hurt myself again today. We're there. I will not hurt myself today by clinging to a limited perspective. I will open to the divine perspective and let it show me a world without limits, without attack, without fear or the need for defenses. In faith, I am willing to let these things go. I thought they protected me, but I was wrong. They are the barriers that hide me from myself, and therefore from my peace, my joy, and from my security. I choose today to let go of all I thought was true, so I can embrace once and for all that which is forever true. The time is today. The day is now. I put aside delay and accept our truth in faith now. There shall be no exception to this acceptance, for acceptance of truth is total and complete. I am moving beyond the body's eyes. Spirit shall be my only guide now. And of course, that was given to me in meditation. And you can just see what a beautiful thought it is. It's almost like a workbook lesson, another workbook lesson given to me during a workbook lesson, something to meditate on all day. You know, in my case, at this point, you know, I certainly did not move to seeing only with the Spirit that day. But by focusing on this all day, what I was doing was nursing my willingness. I was nursing my willingness to let go of self, let go of seeing with ego, and nursing my willingness to see a new way. And that is very, very important, because we will never change the way we see if we are not willing to change the way we see, especially when the going gets tough. You know, when someone walks right up to you and yells right in your face, accusing you of something you know you didn't do. You know, the ego's idea is to jump to your own defense. It takes an awful lot of willingness to pass, to do nothing in a situation such as that, you know, as just one example. So in order to pass when these situations come about, we have to have that willingness not to play. And these are the kinds of thoughts the Holy Spirit would give me in order to nurse and build that willingness. So why don't we click on next entries, which is at the top of the page. And then once you get to the top of the next page, you actually are going to want to grab your scroll bar and scroll all the way to the bottom. The bottom message is called, yay! It is just a decision. What a perfect way to end today. It's Saturday, April 23rd. It is just a decision. Yeah, well, see, we all knew. We could have, you know, we probably could have bet on this if we'd wanted to. Wait, we're starting with it's just a decision. Who wants to bet on how it's going to end? Because I think we're getting to know the Holy Spirit pretty well, right? All right, here we go. It is just a decision. What I fear the most is loss of self. When a brother seems to attack me and I jump to my defense with a grievance, I am defending my limited self, for I have seen my brother and I as separate and our salvation as being in conflict. Is it this self I would defend? Is this the state I would have saved in my mind? There is another self which is still me. It is the self which includes my brother and knows no conflict. It is the self that requires no defense because it simply is. It is the self that embraces all in peace and joy. This self is also in my mind, and this self needs no defense. This self will arise to take its place in my mind as I let it, by letting the limited, separate self go. It is as easy as letting a balloon go. I simply need to decide that I want to let it go, and then open my hand. To open my hand is to be set free. To release is to realize. It is just a decision. So, you know, that really, again, that brings us right back to how we started. That, you know, if we are really focusing on the ego, however that ego happens to look, if we are focusing on the ego, we are believing the ego, we are experiencing the ego. And we just need to decide not to do that. We literally need to make the decision not to entertain the ego. And then again, what we want to watch is the difference between denying through fear and recognizing the opportunity to listen to the ego but letting it go. I mean, that's the thin line we want to stay in, because we all want to be happy. We all want to experience this higher level of love, but we don't want to do it falsely. We want it to be a true and a real experience. So if the thought comes into my mind, you know, that so-and-so is a jerk, that's the example I always seem to use. If the thought comes into my mind that so-and-so is a jerk, you know, what I want to realize is I don't have to believe that thought, regardless of what so-and-so seems to be doing. I don't have to believe that thought. It is a thought I can let go of. I can say, I see that thought, but that is not how I choose to see this person. And that's like opening my hand and letting the balloon go right there. And then I have the experience that is love, or is being called realize here. To release is to realize. But I have to make that decision. The mistake I don't want to make is see the thought so-and-so is a jerk and say, oh God, I'm not supposed to think that. Do you see the difference in that? The fear, oh no, I'm not supposed to think that. You know, that's fear, that's denial, and then any seeming peace I have, is false, because it's like David Hoffmeister calls icing on a mud pie. I don't want icing on a mud pie. You know, I want icing on my angel food cake, maybe. So I want to make sure that I'm not denying those fears. And the way that I don't deny those fears is by realizing they're literally meaningless. You know, we think that because I think so-and-so is a jerk, I'm a bad person, or I would never have had the thought, and that's why I get afraid and why I deny it. But if I realize it is literally just a thought, you know, the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament in the book of Ephesians teaches us to think of the mind, I'll call it the individual mind, or the thinking mind. Think of it as like a radio receiver. And what it does is it picks up thoughts that are within our mind. And right now, our mind is still split. So there are still both ego and Holy Spirit thoughts in our mind. So my little receiver is going to pick up an attack thought or pick up a guilt thought, because that's what receivers do. They pick them up. But just because it picks it up does not mean that I have to accept it. So when, you know, the thought comes into my mind, so-and-so is a jerk, all I have to do is say, yeah, I see that, but that's not what I want. You know, just like we talked another time, just like shopping. When you're shopping and you're looking at, you know, blouses or shirts on a rack, you know, you just go right past the ones you don't want and you only take the ones you do. Same thing with thoughts. You just go right past the ones you don't want. There's no reason to fear them. They don't say anything about you, your reality. Just because a thought came into the mind means nothing. So all you have to do, no matter what it is let it go. You know, the thought could be saying, I do not like that person. And you can say, that's not true. That's just a thought, and let it go. And when you do, you will find love flowing out of you for that same one. You know, so it's just a decision. And deciding to release the ego is as easy as opening our hand and releasing a balloon. We just have to do it. Yeah. Yeah, Dove is saying, can we hear I love you again? Absolutely, I love you. I not only love you, but I feel grateful for you. Another thing that happened to me this weekend is that I realized that I would not experience anything if it wasn't for you. I mean, I really realized that I am so connected to you. It's hard to describe with words, but I am so connected to you that if it wasn't for you, I would have no experience. I would be nothing, literally nothing. You know, what we do for each other is we create experience together, and experience is what we wanted. So I am so grateful to you, and I love you. 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 And my purpose now is to love everything and to love every moment and to realize no matter what seeming thing I'm loving now, that thing is only representative of the whole. So in every moment, I'm loving everyone. Yahweh are. You are love. I love you all so much. Thank you. And I will be back on Thursday at 1 o'clock for the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament, or the NTI study group. Bye-bye.